has that shaky kind of rugged effect to the camera movement here. And especially there's quite a bit of, like, you can see the frame rate changes and the shutter speed and everything is very, very different once everything just kind of kicks off.
This is the Action Filmmaking Decoded Podcast. A podcast dedicated to raw action analysis.
Ooh, my gosh. For fans of action cinema out there, how badass would that be?
Each week, we bring you a new action filmmaker to break down your favorite scenes.
360 off person, round kick the guy from a 360 spin.
Now, introducing your hosts, Darren Tun and Mike Messina.
Hello, and welcome back to the Action Filmmaking Decoded Podcast. I'm your host, Darren. I'm here with my co-host, Mike Messina. Today, we are doing a new segment called the AFD News segment. In this segment, we're going over a couple news topics that have happened in the past couple weeks in the action filmmaking world, and possibly a short breakdown at the end. Mike, what is the first news piece, I guess, that we have on the list?
Yeah, so biggest story right now probably is Scarlett Johansson suing Disney over potential breach of contract involving Black Widow and the release of Black Widow. So basically, Scarlett is a little upset, or I'm sorry, Mrs. Johansson, not on a first name basis just yet, but we're working our way up. You know, we're working way up through the ranks. Basically, she is claiming that by pushing this day and date release on Disney Plus, Disney was sort of purposely pushing profits away from Scarlett Johansson and towards themselves as a company and towards Disney Plus as a streaming service. And apparently Scarlett Johansson's contract and how she profits from the movie is greatly informed by how much that box office makes, how much it actually sells tickets in physical theaters. And then, you know, Disney fires back. They're saying you're being inconsiderate of it being COVID era and the pandemic. And also you already got $20 million from this, which is, I feel like I'm not an expert, but I feel like they really, you know, went for a low blow there by shouting out exactly how much she's making.
Yeah. It is a little bit, it should be secretive, but I don't really know. None of this stuff is.
Yeah, I don't really speak legal, so I'm not trying to give any legal advice, Scarlett, if you're listening to this, but I mean, we'll see where this goes. If she's lit really poorly in the next Marvel movie, then you know that that they're still a little salty at her, I guess.
Yeah, this is actually kind of crazy because I'm not exactly sure how much of, I guess, Disney Plus money she's actually going to get from this. I know it's definitely much cheaper through Disney Plus, but I don't know how much of a pay cut that actually would be, you know?
Yeah, and it probably varies, you know, contract to contract, person to person.
Right. Was it that she was only paid for a theatrical release and not Disney Plus release?
I don't think she was only paid like that. She probably gets a cut of just about everything, but it seems like a large chunk of her compensation was tied to theatrical releases.
Right. Damn, that's crazy.
Yeah, so we'll see. And, you know, there's a whole larger argument here and larger discussion about digital releases versus theatrical releases and what that does to the industry.
Yeah.
Man, shouts to MoviePass. MoviePass tried.
MoviePass was
crazy.
They
did a great job, but they tried. Shouts to them.
Yeah.
And next news item, we have an upcoming Hulu exclusive series called Takeout. This is from Randall Park, and it's going to star Lana Condor of 12 The Boys I've Loved Before fame.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, nice, so this is in very early development. They're looking to, it looks like they're going to go the pilot route and try to get a pilot episode made and then take it from there.
Damn, that's crazy. So any, I guess, insight on what it's about yet or no?
Yeah, so generally it looks like it's some series about Lana Condor playing this double life of being a crime fighter by night and then a takeout cook by day. And something in the Deadline article mentioned how it's going to play around with stereotypes from martial artists and the martial arts world. So I'm pumped to see what that is going to look like. Because even when you have these huge successful martial arts movies, they oftentimes play into those tropes or play into the stereotypes of martial arts and things like that. So it'll be interesting to see how Randall Park is trying to subvert those in a comedic way. Mm. Yeah, while also really paying homage and doing action well. So I'll be excited to see what Lana Condor can do in an action context as well. I know she was in X-Men for a minute, but, you know, she played a sort of tertiary character. I think she played Jubilee, but Jubilee did not have a whole lot to do in that movie.
She didn't have a lot of lines, right, either?
I don't think, I mean, being that we can't remember what character she played 100%, probably not a whole lot. But I'm excited. And Randall Park, I was listening to Spotify, to the Beat Rock music label playlist, and then I hear this Asian rapper dude come on, and I'm like, this sounds a lot like Randall Park. And it turns out it was Randall Park. Turns out he was a rapper in the 90s. So, you know, we all know he can act. Didn't know he could rap until recently. So maybe we'll see if he can, you know, kick butt in action too.
He was on Wildin' Out, right?
I think he was,
like, way back when. Yeah, I remember Timothy DeLaghetto, or now known as Timothy Chantangsuru or whatever.
I did not know that.
Yeah, apparently he posted something on Instagram a while back about Randall Park being the very first Asian on Wildin' Out or something crazy like that.
That's pretty crazy.
I forget.
Shouts to Randall Park too. And next up, Paper Tigers is now number 5 on the iTunes store. Shouts to Bao Tran and Ken Kitagawa, AFD alumni. They were on the podcast a couple of weeks back, maybe about a month back at this point. But yeah, we saw Paper Tigers early as part of the press. So we're now officially part of the Action Movie Hollywood press, selling our souls to the machine. But I'm pumped about it because we get to see these movies early.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of like that exclusive sneak peek that I never knew that I wanted. But now that I have it, it's crazy.
We're hooked. Yeah, we talked about Paper Tigers quite a bit back on that episode, but really excited to see it have this sustained traction, seeing it have this iTunes success now.
Yeah, especially number 5 on iTunes is crazy. I've been following Bao Tran on IG, and he's just been posting about that. So yeah, it's kind of crazy to see it going up there and maintaining that spot too.
Yeah, absolutely. We also have a little John Wick 4 news. So a bit of a casting news call. We have Donnie Yen, Hiroyuki Sanada, Scott Adkins, Marcos Arroyo, possibly Bill Skarsgård. Yeah, AFD alum coming up again. And Rina Sawayama, new pop darling, joining the cast as well. What are your thoughts on these casting announcements?
That is pretty crazy, because I feel like the John Wick series is trying to go down and hit like almost every action star. From, like, you know, they got the guys from The Raid, you know, in the last movie. Having Donnie Yen, Scott Adkins, you know, Marcus Rohrer, a whole bunch of these guys, crazy. I think it was bound to happen.
Yeah. Have you seen the Expendables movies at all?
I have not, actually.
Okay. Because that is sort of the first thing that comes to mind when you start talking about this ensemble action movie cast. Yeah.
Right.
But it seems like John Wick's doing a more restrained, but also maybe, I don't want to say a better approach, but it seems like the John Wick franchise has legs here. And it's not trying to push everyone into one huge explosion of action, but it's using people sort of one at a time in a more focused way that'll let each one of them shine and really show their strengths. So as always, pumped about more John Wick. And next up, we have The Suicide Squad, which just had an early release in a few different regions overseas, banked $7 million. But maybe more importantly than that, we had some reviews coming out. And all the reviews seem pretty good. I think IGN gave it a 9 out of 10.
Really?
Wow. James Gunn seems to have done a pretty good job with this.
Yeah, having James Gunn behind Suicide Squad, it was an interesting choice. It's interesting to see his take.
Yeah, it seems like a good fit for that sort of edgy action comedy comic book sort of a space.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I know, you know, Harley Quinn from the Suicide Squad franchise kind of blew up as this pop culture icon. Shouts to Harley Quinn, too, from coming not from the comic books, but from a cartoon series and then becoming this, you know, figure of pop culture at this point. That's pretty cool to see.
Oh, yeah. And I saw the new cast is actually really interesting. Pete Davidson, Idris Elba. They got
John Cena, I think.
John Cena. Yeah. I remember seeing a comment that was like, man, I can't believe they blew the whole CGI budget on John Cena. Making John Cena visible. I think that was what it was.
Okay. Yeah. I got it. I gotcha. That was good. Good joke.
Yeah.
Next, we have the Snake Eyes film just came out a few weeks ago, I believe, maybe a week or two ago. Reviews came out. Apparently, it's pretty good. It's starring Henry Golding from Crazy Rich Asians fame. Mm. I hear it's pretty good. I hear there's some controversy about the shaky cam usage for this movie.
Yeah, I heard Scott Adkins did a tweet about this, commenting on the shaky cam in this film.
Yeah, he's kind of, he was on a little shade. I liked some spice here in the Twitter feed talking about how it seems like, you know, I think a lot of us thought we were past the Bourne franchise style ultra shaky cam thing that makes it hard to track the action. But apparently it came back in this movie and some people were a bit critical of it in that regard.
Yeah, and I was just watching the Jeremy Johns review and he was like, this is how you build a Steadicam, a basic Steadicam, and now you got a steady shot, you know? So why do we still have all this shaky cam stuff?
Shouts to Jeremy Johns. What an institution of the YouTube movie review world.
Yeah, I've been watching him like for like the longest time. Him and Chris Stuckman for sure.
Oh yeah, those are the two big ones. Next up, we have the Ghostbusters Afterlife trailer, which dropped. This is a project going to be directed by Jason Reitman, starring Paul Rudd, McKenna Grace, and Finn Wolfhard. Darren, did you see this trailer?
I did not yet. No.
Okay. It just dropped maybe today, maybe 2 days ago as of this recording.
But, oh, really?
I remember there was a teaser trailer for it maybe a year ago where it was basically just showing the Ecto-1, the vehicle from Ghostbusters. And it looks pretty dope. It looks like Stranger Things, but Ghostbusters in terms of tone, in terms of having this younger cast of kids sort of unearthing these relics from a few decades back. It looks pretty good. I'm pretty pumped for it. Of course, Paul Rudd, you have Ant-Man essentially starring in this film alongside that young cast. And it seems like there's going to be some cool action comedy sequences in this as well.
Yeah, I think having Paul Rudd in there, it definitely adds the comedic aspect. He's really great, comedic timing, everything.
Yeah, and as a self-proclaimed screenwriter myself, one thing that jumped out at me is that you have Paul Rudd as this sort of the one star who is the adult. And it seems like the rest of the cast is mainly kids. So you get those two different perspectives, which is so important when you're having a sort of revived franchise from a little while ago. So we'll see how that turns out. It seems like Hollywood is a pretty good formula down at this point for those old nostalgia-driven revivals of older franchises. Mm. And moving on to the next trailer, we have the new Shang-Chi trailer that dropped a few weeks back, starring Simu Liu and Awkwafina, one of the newer additions to the Marvel Cinematic Universe roster. What did you think about Shang-Chi?
Yeah, it looks really good. I also saw that there was a behind the scenes of, I think it was Kevin Feige talking about it, and also Dustin Daniel also talking about it as well. A lot of interesting behind the scenes kind of look into Shang-Chi as well. Just interesting to see like Kevin Feige's take on it and why they decided to make a Shang-Chi movie at all. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of going into the Iron Man backstory and how Iron Man was making those weapons for the Ten Rings, and then kind of the Ten Rings connecting to Shang-Chi now.
Interesting. Yeah, because I was an Iron Man fan from back in the day, and I'm really only familiar. Yeah, I hear Ten Rings and I think Iron Man. So I'm interested to see how they're going to tie all that together, because of course you sort of infamously had Iron Man 3 subverting audience expectations in terms of what the Mandarin and the Ten Rings would be.
Yeah,
a lot of people were kind of upset with what they did with it. I wasn't too upset. I thought it was kind of sort of funny what they did. Maybe they did sort of cheapen this legendary Iron Man Marvel villain from the comics. But now they're kind of bringing back that Ten Rings lore, so we'll see what they do with it. Pumped to see some more kung fu flavored action in the Marvel universe, and I'm interested to see how they're going to style that choreography in that world with a larger cinematic tone here.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the choreography there. It looks really good from what I've seen in the trailer. I mean, it was only like two, three seconds of each thing. But another thing I was looking back at was Joseph Lay's style. If you look back at his early works like Mulan, An East Side Story, his YouTube shorts, the style of action designing is very, very similar to what I've seen in the Shang-Chi commercials. Even though it's been like 2 to 3 seconds, I could tell that it's going to be really good. Joseph Lee has that sort of hyper-realistic style. It's not exactly shaky cam, but it's strategic camera movement around the action. He's also a storyboard artist as well, so framing is obviously top-notch and everything else. So I'm really excited for that.
I'm pumped for that action, yeah. Another criticism that I hear, though, that I kind of agree with, is this pattern of making the supervillain just another color paletted version of the superhero. So you saw Black Panther versus Killmonger, kind of the same thing in terms of superpowers. And here there was, I think, one of the final shots in the Shang-Chi trailer where you have this ring technology versus another dude with the same sort of ring technology. So I'm hoping they'll be able to have some contrast there, because the same thing is true in MMA, things like that. Styles make matchups. So if you have some contrast there, that might make it a little more interesting. But still, I mean, Marvel doesn't really know how to make bad movies. Everything is at least good. And then at the ceiling, it's great and amazing and record-breaking.
I've been following Dustin Daniel Cren for a long time. And ever since he released Just Mercy, with, I think it was Michael B. Jordan and Jamie Foxx. Mm-hmm. But I think that's kind of what put him on the radar, because he won some kind of award for that, I think. I'm not sure what it was.
But what is he doing for this movie?
He directed Shang-Chi.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And he's very, very, like, really great with character building. And he did mention that Shang-Chi was a lot about family. So I'm really interested to see what he does with that.
It's a Fast and Furious crossover.
Yeah, yeah.
Love it. Love to see it.
And I also noticed they had Florian Muntianu. I think that's his name.
Okay.
He was from Creed 2, actually. Played Drago's son.
Oh, those dudes are jacked.
Yeah.
Those dudes are scary.
So I think he's the bad guy in this new Shang-Chi film. It looks like he has like that sword arm that I saw in the trailer.
I do enjoy sword arms. And last item here, not really a news item, but something we wanted to touch on. We have John Donaher, the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu legend, and his legendary Death Squad athletes coming over to the Master Ken YouTube channel. What did you think about this crossover of the ages?
I thought it was actually really funny. I first saw it when Ken posted it from Paper Tigers, and I know they worked with Master Ken already.
Mm.
Well, I'm talking about Ken Kitagawa posted it on his IG story, I believe. And then, and Master Ken is obviously from Paper Tigers. But yeah, I was first introduced to Master Ken from that movie, and I was just exploring a lot of his stuff. And then once Ken Kitagawa posted it, I was like, man, this is so funny. This is crazy because I'm kind of getting into jiu-jitsu now a little bit more. So I know a bit about John Donaher and the stuff that he's been doing. I saw him on the Lex Fridman podcast, and then I was hooked. You know, I was like looking up all his YouTube tutorials, everything he was doing at the Death Squad. Really great stuff. And just to see such a serious guy like John Donaher actually team up with Master Ken and do this kind of YouTube collab was, I don't know, I found that really funny. Out of character for John Donaher, but and people always think like, oh, how is jiu-jitsu going to apply in like a real life circumstance? And he's kind of poking fun at that. I don't know if you really saw it, but
I did. I saw through it.
Okay, yeah. He had what was it, the knife knot?
Oh, yeah.
Where he goes in, obviously, jiu-jitsu with weapons and all that kind of stuff, it's it gets a little bit difficult to say like how jiu-jitsu would defend against those, you know, different weapons. And obviously, I think John Donaher also says like AR-15 or something like that. Like, oh, yeah, once you get a gun, your jiu-jitsu doesn't really matter. But at the same time, everyone's also running. So...
a hard question for any martial art to answer.
What really matters? But I think Master Ken pokes a little bit of fun at that and includes a little bit of knives and shows how knives can be very effective against jiu-jitsu.
Arguably effective against jiu-jitsu. Shouts to Master Ken, and shouts to, so Master Ken, if you don't know, I guess we should have explained this at the top, if you haven't heard of him, Master Ken is a character played by actor and martial artist in real life, Matt Page. Mm. And Master Ken's whole shtick is that he's sort of this egotistical, ridiculous martial arts master who sort of, quote, debunks all of these other actual real life martial artists in this funny way. So shouts to him. Yeah. Shouts to the Donaher Death Squad. Go check out their work on YouTube. Very funny stuff.
Yeah, John Donaher Dong Squad. I think that's what he called it.
Oh, yeah, the Defective Dong Squad.
Said. Defective Dong Squad. Yep.
We are an independent international intelligence agency operating at the highest level of discretion. The Kingsman agents are the new knights.
Alrighty, so now we are going to jump into our breakdown segment. This week we are breaking down the Kingsman sequence, the Church Battle Royale. I think that's what they call it.
That's what we'll call it, at least.
Dude. Yeah.
Well, some background on the movie first. Action movie released in 2014, starring in this scene, especially Colin Firth, also Taron Egerton, Samuel L. Jackson, and others. Dude, what was this movie rated? Like, I thought it was PG-13, but after seeing
It
seems like a hard R. I feel like this is definitely a hard R.
Did you see this film in theaters?
Not in theaters, but I saw it when it came out. I didn't think a whole lot of it, but after seeing it, like, it is way better than it has any right to be. It seems like it really knows the audience is going for, the tone it's going for, it knows what it's working with. It is so.
It's a really fun movie.
Yeah, quick plot synopsis for this film. A spy organization recruits an unrefined but promising street kid into the agency's ultra-competitive training program just as a global threat emerges from a twisted tech genius. Love seeing Samuel L. Jackson as the villain in this film as well. And not your typical mustache twirly villain. So one thing that Kingsman does really well is it's sort of an over-the-top but also very satisfying parody slash homage to that James Bond style of, you know, Kingsman British spy action franchise sort of a thing.
Yeah, definitely. You got that gentleman sort of thing going on. I think the very first scene in this movie, though, you really get a sense of what it's going to be. You know what I mean? It kind of really subverts expectations. It's that first scene where I think Mark Hamill's in it and he's in the house.
I need to rewatch this movie.
Yeah. And Gazelle, which is, I think, played by Sophia Boutella. Comes in and she first, I think what happens is Valentine's men are kind of surrounding Mark Hamill to some degree. I could be really wrong about this. It was just some men are surrounding Mark Hamill. And then you have a Kingsman comes in and he pretty much kills everyone there, saves the professor, which is Mark Hamill. And then that's when Sophia Boutella comes in and she has like those knife, like the, those,
oh,
like,
yeah,
the
those
legs.
Blade legs.
Yeah.
Dope.
Yeah. And she like slices him in half.
Seems and I think
that guy at first, I think his name is Lancelot, played by Jack Davenport. Oh yeah. He was in Pirates of the Caribbean as that dude. Remember he wanted to marry like Keira Knightley's character.
Oh, okay. Is he the dude at the end of the first movie where it's like, I think we can afford them?
James Norrington. Yeah, that's
okay.
The guy.
Shouts to that guy.
Yeah,
I love that. And all right, this isn't a Pirates of the Caribbean breakdown, but shouts to that. Like that's another example of a cool, fun action adventure movie. Way better than it had any right to be. That's a movie franchise that started as a ride at Disneyland. So shouts to Pirates of the Caribbean real quick, especially first maybe one or two films.
The other films are like,
I have not seen them. So that is, I'm pleading the fifth on those ones.
All right. Good.
But back to Kingsman. I do remember that opening sequence now. I just took a look at it as well. It's 100%. That is Mark Hamill of Luke Skywalker / Joker fame.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Gazelle coming in with those fantastic prosthetics seems maybe Grindhouse Tarantino inspired a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Pretty cool stuff. And then we have the scene that we're going to break down as well. Like you said, the church, I think you call it a battle royale, which is a pretty accurate statement. So at this point in the movie, you have, I believe his name is Sir Galahad, played by Colin Firth, walking into a church for some reason. I don't really remember why. But then you have the bad guys activating their device, which kind of makes everyone go crazy and want to fight each other. And Colin Firth, his character, is no exception. And he has the added benefit of being a super cool trained spy with all of these fantastic gadgets to kind of just walk through this chaotic sequence and slaughter people with.
Yeah, I think the setup for this sequence is pretty cool. How he's just sitting in the church and she's like, what are you doing? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he tries to get up to leave. And then I forget what he says, but I remember he was like a supporter of Satan and like,
oh, yeah, something witty and totally offensive.
Something like that, yeah. And then he gets up, and right as he's about to walk out, they jack up the machine that makes everyone fight themselves or fight other people. And, yeah, that's when he shoots her, and then the whole thing just goes off.
0 to 100, super quick. You have Leonard Skinner's Freebird blasting in the background.
A literal knob. Like a turn up of the.
Oh, yeah. They literally crank this evil device and then everyone goes crazy.
Right.
What's your reaction to the action of this scene?
Dude, the first time I saw it, I was like, damn, bro, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Because I've been doing action, you know, kind of similar to like that style, but not exactly it, you know? But once I saw it, I took so much inspiration from this scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot in there that I feel like they brought to action scenes that have never been brought to action scenes in this way before.
Especially not in this Hollywood big franchise, big budget context. It reminded me quite a bit of those, you know, YouTube action stars, the Freddie W's, the Corridor Digitals, and a lot of the styling they have there in that.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It's, you know, we talked about shaky cam before. It is this nice balance, in my opinion, of it being shaky to the point where it adds to the scene and to the tone of the scene, mm-hmm. but it's also these long extended cut. Well, there's hidden cuts, which we can talk about in a second,
right.
But it's in the style of this longer uncut sequence. So you can see what's going on, but still have that shaky effect.
I think it has that shaky kind of rugged effect to the camera movement here. And especially there's quite a bit of, like, you can see the frame rate changes and the shutter speed and everything is very, very different once everything just kind of kicks off. You see how, like, right before it starts, it's really, like, smooth and obviously it's cinematic. And then once the fight scene kicks in, you kind of get that nice, like, jittery kind of high shutter speed look to the whole entire thing.
Oh yeah, it feels like you just ground up Tarantino DVDs, took a cocaine snort of those plastic DVDs, and then just went to town here in this James Bond context. And that's
crazy. Yeah, it's super crazy.
And we talked about this similar thing before about how it subverts expectations about the James Bond type genre. It reminded me a bit of seeing Logan for the first time. Where you're Wolverine does all these things in this PG-13, X-Men franchise. What is a hard R Logan movie look like? And it's him slicing people's heads off. And then you have a similar thing here where you're like, James Bond does all these cool things, but
he's supposed to be like the gentleman, right? James Bond, he's supposed to be like really smooth, and like all the action sequences, it's like everything he does, he doesn't really, you know, do it to this effect, I feel like. Where it's this gruesome and this crazy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't think we've ever seen anything like that before.
And to that gentlemanly point, you know, obviously the choreography here, Colin Firth's character is going in, like he is getting his hands dirty. He is doing things that are not gentlemanly at all. He stabs someone with a gun at the end of this. He takes off the barrel and he stabs someone in the throat with a gun. which is like, it's not quite bringing a knife to a gunfight, but there's some joke in there about bringing a knife to a gunfight. I just don't know what it is. But one thing I noticed is, even though he's, you know, going through all these in-depth choreographed fight sequences, he's got this very gentlemanly way about him still. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of see, if you look at his shoulders and his posture, even when he's like judo throwing people, he keeps that very proud posture. And it's true to his character, even when he's going balls to the wall insane, killing people. He's still got that gentlemanly way about him.
Right, right. There's so much to this sequence. It's kind of nuts. And if we do want to go into the hidden cuts of this, before I get into that, I would like to touch on the zoom ins and zoom outs, which are really, really interesting here.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very strategic on what they're trying to help you focus on here. I would say in a long kind of drawn out shot, it's very, very easy to get your eyes drawn to different things and looking around at everything. And I guess the zoom-ins in this sequence really help you focus and see like what certain things they're trying to set up for later.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also for dramatic effect as well, because they zoom in a couple of times when the gunshots happen, when they do hits, it's like bam, bam. And then it cuts in really quickly, it cuts out, just for that added aggression that you feel on screen. Other than that, though, I do see a couple of speed ramps in this as well. Yeah, quite a few speed ramps in there that really amp up the intensity of these scenes.
Yeah, and all of those, you know, if it's a speed ramp or if it's a jump cut to sell an impact, that kind of stuff is happening here left and right, to the point where you could see a lot of places where you could hide a cut. I'm not sure exactly which ones are hidden cuts and which ones are, again, just, you know, doing a jump cut for impact.
Yeah.
But it seems like for these larger kinds of choreographed fight sequences, you need to do quite a bit of cutting in order to film it in piecemeal and be able to say cut and reset a couple of times. But, you know, in addition to that shaky style, you also have, you know, these cutaways to the more calm reactions that we have, because he has a camera in his glasses and you have a camera set up in the church from the bad guys.
I really like that first person point of view that they put in there.
Yeah.
Of him throwing around the guys.
It definitely changes up. Yeah, it changes it up quite a bit. And especially when you have that insane style of filmmaking for a lot of that scene, you need to cut away to breathe a little bit. And you also need some change of perspective, which is where that POV shot comes in, where you're seeing things basically through the camera that's in Sir Galahad's glasses. It allows you to, again, take a breather and change up the scene a little bit. When you're going so fast with so many things going on, that is crucial to the rhythm of the scene, and you've got that through there. And you also get these different reactions. You have, I think his name is Eggsy, Taron Egerton's character. His character is kind of the audience's surrogate reaction, where he's watching through a laptop. It's like, oh my God, did that just happen?
Yeah, I think it's everything so, that it's so funny because the character's reactions are like, oh my God, this is so terrible. But then at the same time, this is so amazing. Like,
yeah.
Like, and then man, you have, this is what Colin Firth's character does at his, you know, when he goes 100%.
Yeah, it's awesome. And then interestingly, you have Sam Jackson as the evil mastermind villain who is definitely concertedly trying to avoid seeing the footage, where he's like, no, this is too much. I don't want to watch what's going on, even though this is 100% what his evil plan is, which was an interesting choice as well. The one thing that I would criticize this a little bit for is some of the CGI looking a bit obviously like After Effects CGI that they kind of slapped on. There's one point especially where he has a mini flamethrower and lights someone's head on fire. And you can very much tell that there was nothing practical about that in terms of effects.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of funny because like I don't even think they're even trying to go for like realistic like... stuff anymore. It just kind of felt like to me it was like, all right, we entered full comic book mode. You know,
100%. And that's the thing, like,
pow, you know.
You can tell it's not, you know, realistic in terms of the visuals and some of the choreography too, but it's not what it's going for, and so it gets that free pass every single time it does it because it's just ramping up this insane style that they're going for.
I think the other part of this I wanted to mention was the dude's neck going backwards, and then he, like,
oh my God, yes,
transforms into a dummy. I think that's what it was.
Yeah,
he grabs him, and then I think there's like a cut in there or something like that, and he turns into a dummy and goes straight to the wall. Realistic looking dummy though, but
his neck snaps back in that cut. Yeah.
Yeah. The guy literally ragdolls.
Yeah. That's true. This blue sweater dude does get ragdolled in real life.
Yeah. A couple other kind of practical effects in there, right? Like, I think the axe to the woman's neck in here. And then at the very end, there's that spear or like part of like that wood piece that goes straight through the guy's head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was kind of nuts.
Totally.
Obviously not real, not very realistic looking, but it's still like, man, it's kind of cool though.
Yeah. And that was a nice choice of something to end the scene on, because you get to have him, you know, stabbed with this large post, but then he kind of stays there in frame. That's the last thing that you see before the tone of the scene kind of comes back to meet the rest of the film, where it's a bit calmer. But having him stand posted onto that, well, that post that he was struck with.
I think the one thing that you're trying to, that we're seeing here is, at least what I was trying to look out for was, what's going on in the background? You know, there's so many people, right?
Yeah, it's and like Waldo thing on rewatching.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of stunt people and a lot of people that watch films are looking at the background, and they're like seeing how well choreographed, I guess, the people in the background are fighting. Because usually you have these large scale fight scenes. We've seen it in The Dark Knight Rises. You know, we've seen it in like the Star Wars film, I think. But it was the second to last Star Wars film. Something happened. I think they pointed out that one of the guards that was around, I forgot what his name was, man. Damn. Do you remember the bad guy from Snoke or whatever his name was?
Oh, Snoke. Yeah.
Yeah. There was like those guards, and then the dude behind her was kind of just like twirling a spear and not really attacking her.
It's got to look cool.
Cool. So there was like a lot of criticism around that. I do remember.
Gotcha. I did like that scene too, though. That was pretty dope.
That was pretty dope when I first saw it. And then everyone pointed out, like, dude, you see that guy in the background? Like, he's just not doing anything. And it tends to happen when you have a lot of people.
Totally, yeah.
I guess my first or second watch through this, I didn't really see any, like, noticeably crazy, like, stuntmen in the background doing who knows what. I don't know.
And the fact that it is this battle royale of carnage definitely helps with that, because it doesn't have to be everyone focused on our main character. They're preoccupied. And in fact, that is another note that I had here, is that because they're, you know, we talked about having a goal in a fight scene or in a shootout with our last episode with Manuel Crosby, and he's talking about how, you have a goal and it adds another layer to the action sequence. This has no real goal to it. It is just carnage. Yeah. And so you can have these really funny moments too, where it's not just people attacking.
You're just trying to see, like, does Harry survive? what happens to these people. I mean, at the same time, you're like, they weren't painted in the best light at the beginning.
So yeah.
There aren't too many stakes. I mean, it is like, oh man, he's killing these innocent people, but yeah.
Yeah, but that's not what you're thinking about. It's just this joy of the violence, and you get these really funny moments. It's not just people attacking Colin Firth's character. It is him interjecting when two other people are fighting, and he'll just insert himself and then kill both of them.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I think it's really interesting how the camera moves here too, because I'm seeing the camera kind of divvy away from him sometimes and focus on some other people and like trying to set things up, right? So this dude's coming from the corner and he has this thing in his hand and he's coming to attack him, and then it goes back to him attacking someone else, and then two people later that dude comes back. You know what I mean? It gives some breather, you know. It kind of adds a little bit more to that scene, you know, to whip away and focus on something else, and the audience is constantly just working and focusing on different things.
Yeah, totally. And people say all the time, you know, you want 90 minutes of nonstop action for these action movies, but that's not really what you want. You need to break up that rhythm. It'll get monotonous and sometimes exhausting.
Right.
So doing that is really important.
Yeah, there's a lot about pacing, especially with that bomb that he plants in that guy's pocket. It really adds to that pacing, right? Because
That's true. That's a really good point.
It kind of stops everything at once, because maybe it's too much for the audience at that moment. Bam, you shoot that big explosion, he has to recover from that for a second. You know what I mean? Gives the audience a little bit of time to breathe.
That's true. And when you're working with actors, a lot of the time you need to really make sure that they understand. You have to pause for a second and let that moment of anticipation come in. And you see, you're right. You see that with every little technique and little movement here. Is before he, you know, drives a stake through someone, there's a pause so that the audience can breathe and say, this is what's going to happen. And I had that payoff of it happening. I also love here in the choreography that he is, you know, doing these grappling clinch movements with that sidearm that he has, especially in the beginning, where he's trapping people and flipping people over and using them as like body shields and incorporating the close combat with the firearm work. Really
this
cool
stuff. Scene has been really broken down like a lot of times. And I remember finding a video on Vimeo. I think we probably could link it below, where someone counted the cuts that they from the church fight scene, and they counted 23 cuts.
Damn.
Which is crazy. So every hidden cut, 23 cuts in that whole scene.
That's literally an average of like 5 cuts a minute. That's
yeah,
pretty crazy.
Exactly. Yeah, so they were stopping, and it wasn't like this full-on thing. It was probably way more cut up than we expected.
Yeah,
and sort of like choppy camera movement really helps sell that, at least.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, this was a great scene. It is sort of an action staple at this point. And yeah, is there anything else you wanted to dive into about this?
I think that's kind of it. I really enjoyed the choreography here. Obviously, I heard a lot about Colin Firth and how he had to prepare extensively for this, especially this sequence here. It was a lot of, obviously, choreography work and stunt double work, as well as camera work that people don't think about, you know, in these kinds of sequences. Shout out to the DP George Richmond for that. It's kind of like that play. I think Matthew Vaughn talks about it a little bit, that play between Colin Firth and George, kind of the camera and the actor moving together and making the sequence, because one is not anything without the other, you know?
True.
All right, guys, that will be it for this week's episode. Take a look out for Tim McAdams next week, part 2. We will be talking about a lot of his film works, including Black Panther. I think we were talking about The Wire, a bit about Atlanta, which was really funny. So keep a lookout for that. Part 2 coming out. You'll get another AFD news segment coming up the next week after that. So stay tuned for that. And that'll be it.
If you liked that, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/actionfilmmaking and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. Stay up to date on the show by visiting our website, actiondecoded.com, and by following us on Instagram @actionfilmmakingpodcast. Until next time, thanks for listening.